Chapter 6. Nervous Types. Pavlov's dogs were recognizable individuals who lived for years in the lab, displaying full-blown personalities that became an integral part of lab culture, a constant factor in the interpretation of experimental results, and the theme of a central integrative line of investigation. The chief and his collaborators routinely described their canine co-workers as weak or strong, lethargic or active, obtuse or intelligent, compliant or independent, passive or impressionable, aloof or sociable, modest or greedy, cowardly or heroic. Co-worker Rita Wright Kovaleva described her Bess as plodding and unimaginative, but a good worker. Undistracted by extraneous noises and movements, this proletarian animal formed conditional reflexes, CRs, slowly, but his hard-won knowledge proved solid and lasting. Her other dog, the scholarly Toy, was easily distracted, and if not challenged with demanding work, even fell asleep, bored, on the stand. Yet once engaged, Toy easily outpaced the workmanlike Bess. When studying digestion, Pavlov had pronounced the dog almost a participant in the experiments conducted upon it. In CR research, there was no almost about it. Lab animals were not experimented upon. Rather, they worked. Some worked well, others poorly. Some tasks put before the dog during its workday, such as forming a delayed CR to electrical shock, were so extremely demanding that only a noteworthy few proved capable of them. Dogs responded differently to the sacrifice of their freedom for the restraint of the experimental stand, and some bridled at their working conditions, refusing, for example, to cooperate with a new co-worker or labor in the isolated chambers of the Tower of Silence. They could be hurt or even broken by the burdens of work or life in general, by an overly taxing task, a fight in the kennel, or the loss of a sexual partner. Sometimes an experience on the stand or with another dog elicited an unexpected reaction, exposing a deep wound from its pre-lab life. Burdened beyond endurance, it might whine, refuse to eat or work, behave in an uncharacteristically timid or aggressive manner, or present symptoms of mental illness. The quality of a dog's work and personality was very important for its human collaborator. Particularly intriguing results might attract Pavlov to the bench, leading to a close collaboration, enthusiastic reports about the co-worker's labors during the lab's regular and spontaneous gatherings, mention in Pavlov's talks and publications, and perhaps a lab or professorship of one's own. It was only fitting, then, that co-workers were frequently photographed with their dogs, and in 1926 marked the 25th anniversary of Pavlov's CR research with a jocular greeting from his canine scientific collaborators. The following year, they presented him with a photo album of 40 currently employed dogs with a list, but no photos, of each animal's current human partner. During the first decade of CR research, co-workers frequently observed that different dogs responded differently to identical experiments. By 1918, several tentative typologies had emerged, and in the 1920s and 1930s, investigation of nervous types was central to lab research. The task was to explain the differing results of CR experiments and to map these on the dog's varying behaviors and personalities. Thus, the physiological would be fused with the psychological, and both would be rendered pravilni. This was, to say the least, a very ambitious endeavor. As Pavlov devoted to it more co-workers, dogs, and experimental trials, the data became increasingly discordant, and their relationship to personality and behavior increasingly difficult to divine. Conceptualizing his canine collaborators as an animal or person in nature and society, he constantly introduced plausible new variables, the onset of mental illness and the interplay of nature-nurture, for example, that might deliver that wonderful moment when suddenly everything becomes clear. But More data just compounded the problem. The doctrine of nervous types became more far-reaching, but also less precise, less refutable, less pravilni. Here, we explore this history through three episodes of the 1920s. Postel, Milord, and Freud's Anna O. In mid-1922, intent on explaining the divergent results in identical experiments on different dogs, Pavlov joined Maria Petrova in their semi-private experimental quarters on the second floor of the Tower of Silence to launch a 3-year comparative study of two dogs, Postel and Milord, whose personalities and performance in experiments differed markedly. The older Milord was solid, balanced, and peaceful. The younger Postel was very lively and active. Petrova and Pavlov first established that the dogs' personalities matched their salivary patterns in experiments establishing CRs to 6 stimuli. Milord efficiently formed the 6 CRs, and also the more difficult delayed reflex to each. A successful delayed CR manifested the standard salivary response to a stimulus, but only after a time lag, and this, according to lab doctrine, required a balance of excitation and inhibition. Milord enjoyed exercising that balance, afterward becoming livelier in appearance and eating with gusto. The sprightly Postel formed the CRs even more quickly, but proved inferior at differentiation and delayed reflexes. The confrontation of excitatory and inhibitory processes involved in those tasks proved so trying that he fell into such an irritated state and such a fury that further work was impossible. Having established that their dogs differed in nervous type, Pavlov and Petrova decided to test what happened when this collision of excitation and inhibition was taken to the extreme, to the point of a break. This turn reflected Pavlov's long-standing interest in psychiatry. In the 1890s, probably inspired by his family history, his own morbid spontaneous paroxysms, and his bouts, and those of his friends, with neurasthenia and hysteria in the 1870s and 1880s, Pavlov had begun regularly to make the rounds with clinicians at the Alexander III Home for the Care of the Mentally Ill, where his friend, Alexander Timofeev, was director. During Russia's Civil War, when experimental research ground to a halt, he often skied to the home, and in an article on Psychiatry as a Partner of the Physiology of the Cerebral Hemispheres, 1919, he compared some of its patients with the lab dog, Norka. He later attributed the idea of breaking Postel and Milord to the influence of Sigmund Freud's analysis of the landmark case of Anna O. Generally critical of Freudian theory, Pavlov credited the founder of psychoanalysis with important insights that, like those of physicians in general, required the undergirding of a truly scientific, physiological analysis. As he put it to American co-worker Horsley Gant, "We cannot ascribe all of his ideas to fantasy. There is much truth in what he says, and this is because it is based on physiology. He makes the mistake of considering himself a psychiatrist instead of a physiologist, and he uses psychological terminology. There is much reality in what he has to say about the collisions and inhibitions in the brain." Reminiscing years later, Pavlov explicitly identified Freud as his inspiration to produce neuroses in dogs by means of collisions. The stenographic account renders his remarks in the third person. In one of his early works, Freud described a case of neurosis in a woman who had for many years needed to care for her sick, fatally ill father, whom she loved very much, and who had suffered terribly from the expectation of his inevitable death, attempting all the while to appear happy to him, hiding from him the seriousness of his illness. Through psychoanalysis, Freud established that this lay at the basis of the neurosis that developed later, viewing this as the difficult confrontation of the processes of inhibition and excitation. Ivan Petrovich immediately proposed using this same difficult confrontation of two opposing processes as the fundamental method for eliciting experimental neuroses in dogs. Freud had used the case of Anna O. in Studies on Hysteria, 1895, to illustrate his view that hysterics suffer mainly from reminiscences and to promote the talking cure. His analysis featured psychic forces that conflicted, combined, and inhibited one another. And he sought to explicate the dynamics of these processes while remaining agnostic about their ultimate nature. Pavlov identified Freud's conflicting psychical actors as his own fundamental nervous forces, excitation and inhibition. Anna O's hysteria resulted from the conflict between the powerful excitatory impulse of her grief and the strong inhibitory impulse of her determination to hide that grief from her father. The physiological basis of these emotions was identical in humans and dogs, Pavlov reasoned, so he should be able to reproduce this same conflict in Postrel and Milord. The experimenters did so by using the same procedure as had Erofeva a decade earlier, by feeding the hungry dog only in association with an electrical shock, that is, establishing shock as a conditional stimulus, CS. This, they reasoned, created a clash between excitatory and inhibitory impulses in the dog's nervous systems. When the animal began to salivate in response to shock, Petrova increased its intensity to increase the severity of that clash, and so subject Milord and Postrel to the same basic plight as Freud's Anna O. Each dog eventually broke, but in a different direction. Postrel's reflexes lost their regular character, and experiments showed that his inhibitory process, previously weak, was shattered, leaving him pathologically overexcitable. The better-balanced Milord proved more resilient, continuing to salivate at ever higher levels of shock, but he too eventually broke in the direction of inhibition. The dogs now suffered two different neuroses corresponding to the differences in their nervous system. Having rendered their dogs neurotic, the experimenters attempted to cure them. Drawing on her clinical experience, Petrova rested and then treated them with bromide salts, in light of its indubitable action in the treatment of several nervous illnesses in people. Pavlov had himself been treated with bromides during his bouts with neurasthenia and hysteria. Milord did not respond to either therapy and was retired from experimental practice. Postrel, on the other hand, responded well. The dog's ability to differentiate was restored, and his conditional inhibitors now elicited a satisfyingly perfect zero drops of saliva. That cure, however, proved short-lived. It now became standard lab procedure to analyze dogs' nervous type, and psychiatric concepts came to play an increasingly important role in the interpretation of experimental results. One result was the reinterpretation of Erofeva's much-ballyhooed experimental trials of 1911 to 12. Earlier, her dog's salivation to a combination of food and electrical shock had led Pavlov to equate them with the Christian martyrs who, inspired by love of God, had borne their torture with a smile. Now, they were re-diagnosed as broken, mentally ill. August, the flood, and the physiology of cowardice. On September 24, 1924, a catastrophic flood inundated Leningrad, washing over the grounds of Pavlov's lab at the IEM, where some 100 dogs were soon pressed against the wire ceilings of their kennel, straining to keep their noses above the rising waters. Co-workers rescued them by swimming into the cages, grabbing the terrified animals by the head, forcing them underwater, guiding them to safety through the submerged cage door, and ferrying them to the safety of a distant building. The rescuers noticed that the animals at this time completely changed their usual behavior. They huddled close to people and to each other. Many wailed loudly, and even the most aggressive among them did not provoke fights, but rather were obedient. Even dogs that had been praised for their stronger nervous organization were much distressed, but all were saved. Among the survivors was August, described by coworker Alexander Speransky as a very lively, mobile, greedy dog, distinguished by submissiveness and cowardice. For example, if Speransky shouted, clapped his hands, or moved suddenly, August would wag his tail, squat on the floor, and urinate. August had nevertheless proved a good experimental animal, developing healthy CRs to 6 stimuli and performing differentiations successfully. When experiments resumed 1 week after the flood, however, his CRs had disappeared, and he responded to the feed bag with a clearly negative movement reaction, that is, fearfully. Over the next few days, Speransky monitored the dog's health and instructed attendants not to feed him off the stand. Yet, the strange behavior persisted. Pavlov now joined Speransky and noticed that the dog's affect changed when alone. Peacefully occupying the stand when his master was present, August panted and moved fitfully upon his departure. Exposure to a CS exacerbated this response. When Speransky remained in the room while Pavlov conducted experiments from outside, August approached and ate from the feed bag normally and responded to most CSs as he had before the flood. His reaction to the buzzer, however, showed that he had not recovered. The dog suddenly hopped to his feet and began to fitfully move upon the stand and howl. When the buzzer ceased, he exhibited a passive defensive reaction and responded weakly to all CSs. The experimenters then used Speransky's presence in the room to reverse this, weaning the dog off this social factor by gradually replacing the coworker with components of his presence, for example, his jacket. August now responded even to the buzzer with levels of salivation that approximated pre-flood levels, although the data revealed some continuing pathology. Hypothesizing that August's peculiar reactions resulted from the trauma of the flood, Pavlov and Speransky prepared a decisive experiment. A buzzer was sounded to recreate the alarms of that day, and a hose noisily flooded August's experimental chamber. The dog tossed about against the straps, whined, and strained against the stand. And after this, he did not eat, gave no reflexes whatsoever. In a word, he broke. Speransky then began applying August's CSs. The animal responded only by panting and twisting in the stand. Every attempt to restore his CRs failed, eliciting various hypnotic phases intermediate between wakefulness and sleep. The experimenters diagnosed August with traumatic neurosis, or fear neurosis, elicited by a sharp disturbance of the balance of excitation and inhibition. Only a few of the dogs subjected to the flood manifested this neurosis, which testified to the importance of inborn constitution. It made good sense that August, a dog with a sharply expressed passive defensive reflex and characterized by exaggerated inhibitory processes, had responded by breaking in the direction of inhibition. The combination of constitution and experience had rendered him neurotic. In a speech to the Parisian Society of Psychologists in December 1925, Pavlov used August's ordeal to demonstrate the power of CR methodology to illuminate psychological subjects and to propose a classification of nervous types that joined his research to Western medicine's most ancient tradition. The dogs in his lab displayed a great range of behaviors and personalities, which had long made it difficult to completely reproduce our facts in different animals. When grouped by nervous type, however, these varied results fell into place, corresponding to differences in behavior and personality. Using August as his model, Pavlov explained the behavior, personality, and performance in CR experiments of cowardly dogs as a result of the predominance of inhibition over excitation. The relative weakness of the latter process was probably rooted in the dog's cortical cells, which contained either an inadequate supply of excitatory material or low-quality material that was easily consumed. An excitatory stimulus, then, quickly exhausted such dogs' excitatory capacity, eliciting an inhibitory impulse that protected the cells from damage. August's salivary responses during experiments closely mirrored his behavior and psychological character. When his CRs diminished, the dog also responded to food, not by approaching it to eat, but rather with a passive-defensive, fearful response. Clearly, at the foundation of normal timidity and cowardice, and especially pathological phobias, lies the simple predominance of the physiological process of inhibition as an expression of the weakness of the cortical cells. Surveying the dogs in his labs, Pavlov claimed that they corresponded to the classical Hippocratic types. For the Hippocratic physician, each constitutional type, sanguinic, melancholic, phlegmatic, and choleric, resulted from a particular combination of humors, blood, black bile, phlegm, yellow bile, and had its own recognizable predispositions and personality. When the combination of constitution, environment, and way of life gave rise to humoral imbalances, this resulted in poor health, which the physician rectified through bleeding, purging, and regimen. For Pavlov, the connection between his experimental physiology and ancient medical wisdom, like that between his digestive research and physicians' emphasis on appetite, demonstrated the truth of his research and its ability to explain the scientific basis of time-honored empirical wisdom. Pavlov claimed that his findings fit the Hippocratic typology especially well for the two extreme types, the sanguinic and the melancholic. Postrel served as a model sanguinic, and August as melancholic. Is it not natural to consider and name him melancholic if at every step, at every moment, the surroundings elicit in him always the very same relentless, passive-defensive reflex? Between these two types were two variants of the balanced type, presumably the phlegmatic and choleric. In each, the excitatory and inhibitory processes were of adequate strength and interacted in a precise and timely fashion. He offered neither examples nor elaboration. In his 1927 monograph, Pavlov observed that these intermediary types were better adapted to the natural conditions of life, and therefore biologically more resistant, and conceded that a large number of animals cannot be placed definitely in any of the four types. Returning with Petrova to the Tower of Silence, he experimented on several such animals, chosen again for their behavior and affect, which led to the introduction of a third variable. Aside from tending toward either excitation or inhibition, dogs and people could be relatively balanced or unbalanced. This brought Pavlov fully into sync with the Hippocratic foursome. The choleric was unbalanced and excitable, the sanguinic excitable but fairly balanced, the phlegmatic tended toward inhibition but was fairly balanced, and the melancholic was unbalanced and inhibited. This new schema, however, required re-diagnosis of particular dogs. The excitable, unbalanced postural was now typed as choleric, replaced as model sanguinic by two dogs, including the Napoleonic type, Pingle, who were excitable but too well balanced to be broken. This typology served Pavlov well in brief presentations and became a staple of news coverage when he became internationally famous in the 1920s. But, as he well knew, it hardly explained the great variation in experimental results and personalities, or the relationship between the two, among his experimental animals. Recognizing that the life experiences of both lab dogs and humans were endlessly complex, he continued to explore new variables toward that fine day when CR data and personality would all fall into place. Garsik, Nature, Nurture, and Pavlov's Autobiographical Insight. Addressing London's Royal Society in 1928, Pavlov expressed the hope that his research would inform people's upbringing and self-education. I, for one, while looking at these experiments, have understood much both in myself and in others. He was alluding to ongoing studies of a puzzling group of experimental animals that were complicating his typology with yet another variable, and in so doing, resolving a long-standing mystery about himself. These were dogs whose performance in CR experiments clearly did not match their personality traits. That led Pavlov to emphasize the plasticity of the nervous system, to investigate the influence of life experience and training, and to distinguish between inborn temperament and the mature character that resulted from the interaction of nature and nurture. One such investigation was conducted by co-worker Nikolai Vinogradov with Umnitsa, another weak, inhibited type who, like August, had worked well on the experimental stand until the flood left her unable to produce consistent CRs. Vinogradov's experiments highlighted the importance of two dimensions of higher nervous activity that were acquiring increasing recognition: the role of experience, or training, and that of the social exciter. As a result of Umnitsa's weak nervous system and associations with the flood, she could not initially form a CR to the electrical buzzer, which elicited an immobilizing, passive-defensive reflex. So Vinogradov muffled the buzzer, developed in the dog a CR to this gentler, less alarming stimulus, and gradually worked up to and achieved a CR to the buzzer at full strength. That same approach enabled him to extend the length and intensity of Umnitsa's workday. Vinogradov also noticed that the dog performed poorly in an isolated chamber, but could work longer and respond more precisely in the constant, friendly presence of the experimenter master. The social exciter, he and Pavlov concluded, raised the general tonus of the higher nervous system, which was particularly salutary for weak nervous types. Vinogradov's techniques were used to heal the shattered inhibitory processes of postural, broken earlier by Pavlov and Petrova, reviving the animal's lab career and necessitating another re-diagnosis of his nervous type. In the 1930s, Pavlov thrilled to postural's achievements in experiments, regaling co-workers with regular reports about this previously underestimated hero with the nerves of a knight. Two studies of cowardly dogs further complicated the relationship between dogs' performance in CR experiments and their behavioral and personality attributes. Dmitry Kuimov's dog, Felix, was cowardly and submissive, yet performed marvelously in the stand, differentiating easily between the metronome at two different speeds, which was achievable only by those with a balanced nervous system. How, then, to explain the animal's cowardice? This, Kuimov concluded, no doubt at the suggestion of the chief, who was observing his experiments, was probably the result of the dog's earlier training. Felix's clipped tail, they reasoned, testified to his former master's hope that he would become a show dog. That pampered status had spared him the interactions with other dogs and rigorous demands from humans that might have toughened him up to the level his inborn qualities made possible. Alexander Ivanov Smolensky's dog, Garsik, seemed similarly paradoxical. He shrank fearfully at the approach of a dog or human, and so seemed an inhibited type with a weak cerebral cortex. Yet he formed both positive and negative CRs quickly, accomplished delayed reflexes easily, and emerged unscathed from experimental challenges that broke weak dogs. Intrigued, Pavlov worked closely with his co-worker on Garsik's case, and they concluded that these contradictory indications resulted from the animal's upbringing. Garsik had been born and raised in the lab's kennel, that is, in conditions of unfreedom, in a jailhouse regime, which had encouraged caution, broken his spirit, and produced submissive behaviors that masked his true nervous character. Here again, the mapping of experimental results on observable behaviors and personalities required another variable: the animal's life experiences. Garsik inspired the chief to create in Koltushi a center for the study of the nature-nurture relationship. Pavlov was preoccupied with Garsik in 1928 when he confided to his distinguished London audience that experiments on nervous types had illuminated much about myself. He clearly identified with the dog's divergence between inborn temperament and mature character, as Pavlov must have considered himself an unlikely nervous type to become a successful scientist. As we have heard, he believed that only a firm balance between excitation and inhibition allowed an organism to differentiate precisely between similar stimuli, and generally, to perceive reality correctly. That same balance, he had explained in his impassioned, pained speeches of 1918, was the physiological basis for the great realism of the English and German types, and so for their successes in the culture of daily life, self-government, and science, while the imbalance of the Russian type, the predominance of excitation, underlay his homeland's woeful performance in those same spheres. Yet Pavlov himself was hardly a strong, balanced type. Famously explosive, he described himself as an unrestrained choleric and a cycloid, a cyclically unbalanced strong type. He was perhaps describing his own feelings during his legendary outbursts when he stated confidently that if an overexcitable dog could speak, it would report that it cannot restrain itself from doing what it should not. How, then, could this unbalanced choleric become such a successful scientist? At the turn of the century, Pavlov had enjoyed discussing his scientific style in terms of the German chemist and philosopher Wilhelm Ostwald's classification of thinkers as romantics or classicists. By the 1920s, he naturally employed instead the framework of nervous types. Pavlov's longtime associate, Josef Rosenthal, was no doubt drawing on such discussions when, in an article for Physicians Gazette on the occasion of Pavlov's 80th birthday in 1929, he analyzed the chief's nervous type. Pavlov's difficult life before 1890 had developed in him strong self-control that balanced his inborn excitability. The result was a personality possessing both powerful excitatory and inhibitory processes. This was the physiological basis of Pavlov's scientific style, which combined a powerful excitatory phase, featuring free and even fantastic theorizing, with an equally powerful inhibitory phase, with all-sided critical analysis of hypotheses. Devoted to Pavlov and intimately familiar with his temper, Rosenthal would never have published such a revelation, let alone in a celebratory article, without approval from the chief himself. Pavlov's abilities and achievements, like Garsik's then, resulted from the interaction of heredity and life experience. His elliptical comment in London about enhanced self-knowledge referred to this resolution of an autobiographical riddle through his anthropomorphic and often self-referential experimental research on animals. Chasing the Horizon. Recognizing the importance of life experience immeasurably complicated the definition of nervous types, and this at a time when the state was investing enormous sums to build Pavlov's science village at Koltushi, where the central goal of investigating nature-nurture and breeding pure nervous types required a precise and reliable typology. In November 1930, Pavlov announced to his co-workers that another grand revision was necessary. He had been mistaken to think that excitable types are specialists at excitation but bad at inhibition, and inhibitory types the reverse. For example, Postrel, who had earlier exemplified the excitable type, had since demonstrated the ability, with sufficient training, to develop very strong inhibition. So, Pavlov abandoned the four Hippocratic types based on the relative strength of excitation and inhibition, and instead proposed the qualities of strength, balance, and lability. Nerve cells, he explained, have two basic qualities, the ability to perform work, and lability, to switch responses quickly, the opposite of inertia. Dogs with strong excitatory processes might also have strong inhibitory processes. Their relative balance and lability were separate, independent qualities. He pondered the situation privately and unhappily. Titling a single sheet of paper, "Possible Types of Central Nervous System," he began combining systematically the three qualities that influenced a dog's responses to an experiment, and so defined its nervous type, sometimes provisionally identifying these combinations with a particular dog. He began, 1. Strong, balanced, labile. 2. Strong, balanced, inert excitation and inhibition. 3. Strong, balanced, inert excitation, labile inhibition. 4. Strong, balanced, inert inhibition, labile excitation. 5. Strong, unbalanced with a relative dominance of excitation, labile. 6. Strong, unbalanced with a relative dominance of excitation, inert excitation, and inhibition. Working out the various combinations, he listed 12 possible strong types before reaching 13, weak, balanced, labile, passive defensive, and delineating 12 possible varieties of weak dogs, identifying one of the lab's notable cowards provisionally within one of these. 22. Weak, relative dominance of inhibition, inert excitation and inhibition. Umnitza? Then came 25, middling, balanced, labile. But now headed for at least 36 possible types, and with very few of his 150 dogs included in with any of them, he ended his list with the desultory recognition, and so forth. His journey to the horizon continued.